Right now, it's time for the Political Junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
New poll numbers change the dynamic in Iowa. Half the Democratic hopefuls turn their back on Michigan in a full-page ad in today's New York Times to draft Al Gore for president. But what a lot of political junkies are talking about today is latecomer Fred Thompson and his debate debut with a crowd of Republican candidates yesterday. The consensus is that this was Mitt Romney's best line and Fred's.
This is a lot like Law and Order, Senator.
It has
a huge cast. The series seems to go on forever, and Fred Thompson shows up at the end.
And to think, I thought I was going to be the best actor on the stage.
Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor and our political junkie, joins us here in Studio 3A. If you have seen any of the candidates in person this year, and I guess we're asking for a lot of callers from Iowa and New Hampshire mostly, but if you've had Dennis Kucinich in your living room or went to Tom Tancredo's town meeting, call and tell us what you thought. What's your impression of, well, Mitt Romney or Hillary Clinton? 800-989-8255. Email us. talk@npr.org. And Ken, I guess we should start with that debate yesterday. Thompson did get that one good line in. What's the consensus on how well he did?
Well, it was kind of embarrassing to watch all the attention on him, given the fact that the other candidates had been campaigning around the country for most of the year, if not longer. I guess the feeling was he didn't embarrass himself. He didn't make any gaffe that everybody's waiting for. He didn't just, you know, fall down and throw up, as one commentator wrote.
Or drool.
Drool, exactly. He also wasn't the savior of the Republican Party that a lot of people said if only Fred Thompson would get in. He seemed a little unsteady at times, but really he almost, more than anything else, he seemed irrelevant. It seemed to me that the dynamic, at least as last night's, yesterday afternoon's debate, was between the two ostensible front runners, and I'll tell you why I call them two front runners, but Rudy Giuliani and Mitt Romney. Rudy Giuliani clearly leading in the national polls. He has been for several months. Mitt Romney with leads in Iowa and New Hampshire, the first two contests of 2008. So, and the two of them really sparred against each other on economic policy, on their records in Massachusetts and New York City.
And on the electrifying issue of the line item veto, let's take a listen.
I'm in favor of the line item veto to make sure that the president is able to help cut out pork and waste. Washington is finally going to have a reduction in spending. Republicans got spending out of control.
John, you have to be honest with people, and you can't fool all the people all the time. The line item veto is unconstitutional. You don't get to believe about it. The Supreme Court has ruled on it. So you can bang your head up against a stone wall all you want. I am in favor of a line item veto, except you have to do it legally.
Mitt Romney and then Rudy Giuliani.
I know. To me, it was the most exciting debate since Quimoy and Matsu were the big issues in 1960. But it is a sacred issue for the Republican Party, given the fact that Republicans really feel that one battle against excess spending would be the line item veto.
And it's a way to wrap themselves in the mantle of Ronald Reagan.
Exactly true. But Giuliani is exactly right. The Supreme Court did rule it unconstitutional, and so that's where it stands today.
Mm-hmm. One of the names that repeatedly came up in this Republican debate was that of Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton.
Well, certainly they have more in common with their opposition to Hillary Clinton, and they each feel, Rudy Giuliani, Mitt Romney, and others have said that they feel that they are the best equipped to take on Hillary Clinton. If you look at the Democratic side, polls everywhere seem to show Hillary Clinton with a double-digit lead. Again, you know, we'll see what happens in Iowa and New Hampshire. But for right now, she seems to be the presumptive Democratic nominee, and both Giuliani and, to a lesser extent, Romney and the other candidates tried to make the case that they were best equipped to take her on and hold the White House for the Republican Party.
We have some other questions today, but we want listeners to call us. If you've seen one of the candidates in person, call and tell us your response, what you thought. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And we also had this trivia question going. Ken supplied it. Given the controversy after Clarence Thomas's biography came out, he suggested that there was one U.S. senator who voted against the nominations of both Clarence Thomas and long ago against to Thurgood Marshall. Here's an email we got from Claude in Salem, Massachusetts. Senator Ernest Hollings, Democrat of South Carolina, voted against Marshall and Thomas, he suggests.
Not correct. He did vote against Thurgood Marshall. There were 11 senators in 1967 who voted against Thurgood Marshall, the first African-American on the Supreme Court, but he did vote in favor of Clarence Thomas in 1991.
And let's see if we can get Rich on the line. Rich is with us from Minneapolis.
Yes, I believe the answer to the question is Strom Thurmond.
Strom Thurmond?
No, Strom Thurmond, the same exact thing. Strom Thurmond did it. He was the only Republican to oppose Marshall in 67, but he, like Fritz Hollings, voted for Clarence Thomas in 91.
Nice try, Rich.
I see.
Okay, thanks very much. Here's an answer from Madeline. The answer is, she writes, Robert Byrd, and I know this because I am a, then she puts in parentheses, the faithful listener to It's All Politics, my very favorite podcast.
Well, Madeline is correct as always. First of all, she's very correct by listening to my podcast. That proves she's correct. But yes, it was Robert Byrd. It was interesting because Robert Byrd was kind of an anti-civil rights southern border state conservative back in the 60s when he voted against Clarence Thomas, when he voted against Thurgood Marshall. But then he voted against Clarence Thomas for other reasons, the fact that Bobby Byrd had moved considerably to the left by then.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for your responses to the...
I knew there was somebody who listened to the podcast. It was Madeline.
Well, It's All Politics is available by podcast. And, of course, Ken Rudin's column, The Political Junkie, is available at npr.org. And he joins us here every Wednesday on Talk of the Nation. But let's go back to the question of which candidates have you seen. And let's get Jay on the line. Jay's with us from Fort Madison. Is that in Iowa?
Yeah, it's right on the Mississippi River.
Uh-huh. Which candidate did you see?
Yeah, we've seen quite a few of the Democratic ones, but for some reason not as many Republican. The ones I've seen is Edwards, Richardson, Barack, and I got invited to the Hillary thing earlier this spring, and I couldn't get there, but I've read a lot of reports, you know, of all of them locally.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and
of those you've actually seen, what are your impressions?
Well, I really think Edwards and Barack was really inspirational. Richardson had a great sense of humor and personality, and I think people were really inspired by the first two, and they really liked Richardson. And the question I had was about Hillary, because what I've read for the visit she's made around this part of the state, and then just this morning the report of the five stops she went to the reporter for NPR, she doesn't answer questions like the others do.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is they're trying to, like, they put up their street signs already, and, like, oh, the one report I heard where she answered a question, and I don't know if Ken would know this, New Hampton, Iowa, and the only reason I knew this is because of a Ed Schultz radio show. They didn't report it in Iowa or
go ahead and tell us what it was.
This man asked about Iran and why she voted for that bill, and she got really, her back arched up to him and said he was, like, set up to put that question out. And she said she heard that question three times already, and she's tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
And she did, you know, I don't care what he was or not. She should be able to answer that question without getting...
And just to explain to listeners, that vote on the bill was to designate the Revolutionary Guards in Iran as a terrorist organization. Ken?
Right. And the opponents of that bill, which was sponsored by Joe Lieberman, basically say that it gives Cheney and the Bush administration at least an excuse eventually to go to war against Iran. And that's why many of the other Democratic candidates opposed to it. But she did. Jay's exactly right. Her back did arch up. She complained that it was one of those planted questions by her opponents. And because she says she's been asked this question before, but she has been asked this question before, because as John Edwards said, are we going to be back in the same situation we were last time when she said she gave George Bush the benefit of the doubt in 2002 to go to war, and then ultimately that was a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of anti-war folks feel that vote on the Iranian Revolutionary Guard was also a mistake.
Barack Obama focusing on that and again on her vote on the Iraq War in an interview with the Associated Press today, though he avoided a question of why does he think if she was wrong about those issues, why does he think he's behind her in the polls?
Although Barack Obama missed that vote on Iran. Others voted against it, but Barack missed that vote.
Anyway, Jay, thanks very much for the call.
Yeah, I just feel like she thinks she's entitled.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks very much.
I don't get it.
Okay, bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Brad. Brad's with us from Cedar Rapids in Iowa.
Yeah, hi.
How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. You know, I'm just kind of throwing my two cents worth in here. I'm pretty new to Iowa. I've only been here for about 2 years. I actually moved here from Idaho, so we're off the beaten track in Idaho. But here in Iowa...
Another 50 years, you'll be a local.
That's true. It's really neat here in Iowa because you do get a chance to meet these people. And I live in a little teeny town between Waterloo and Cedar Rapids, a little town called Vinton, about 5,000 people. You know, Joe Biden comes to our town. Edwards has been to our town a couple times. This past Saturday, I was at the farmer's market in Cedar Rapids, just walking downtown, and there's Dennis Kucinich. I got a chance to meet him one-on-one. And it's just, this is just like no other place in the United States, like, other than New Hampshire, where you can have this interaction and really get to meet the candidates almost, you know, one-on-one.
And what did, just, what did you talk to Dennis Kucinich about?
Well, I didn't talk to him about a whole lot. I was just happy that he came to our state, you know, because, you know, so many of the top front runners, and you don't get a chance to really, you know, especially with folks like Dennis and, you know, mm-hmm. maybe, and just basically just to meet him. I was just excited to have a chance to meet him.
All right, Brad, thanks very much.
You know, it reminds me of that great quote in 1976 of the fellow in New Hampshire was asked, what you think of Mo Udall, you know, who's campaigning for the Democratic nomination. He says, well, I really don't know. I've only met him 7 times. So it's not that they're entitled, but they certainly get an opportunity to meet candidates that most of the country will never have that chance.
Now let's talk to Kyle, and Kyle's with us from Allen, Michigan.
Hi there.
Hi.
Mitt Romney came to our local college and gave him a commencement speech about 5 months ago. And he whisked in. He came in and gave his speech, and he was whisked away. Very little campaigning. Didn't stick around very long at all. And Michigan's in a lot of trouble. We have some of the nation's highest unemployment. It's in a real industrialized area where we have a lot of jobs and corporations that's left, and I have not seen anybody.
Michigan. Was it a good speech?
It was a very nice speech, very well-spoken individual, good-looking guy. He looks like the prototypical presidential candidate.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks very much, Kyle.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're listening to the Political Junkie segment on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Ken Rudin, that call from Michigan, because Michigan is so different from Iowa and New Hampshire, that's the reason they wanted to move their primary up to compete with both Iowa and New Hampshire, but they're running into a bit of a problem.
Well, they did move their primary up to January 15th, but especially on the Democratic side, the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, with the strong backing of Iowa and New Hampshire, the early states, said we basically insist that the Democratic candidates do not campaign there because they violated the understanding that only the certain early states, Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina, they can go first. But the fact is that Michigan moving before February 5th, which is against the rules, all the way to January 15th, so the candidates are told not to campaign there. And as of yesterday, Barack Obama, John Edwards, Bill Richardson, Joe Biden, all said they will pull out of it. Now, a lot of them are furious with Hillary Clinton, who says, well, I'm not going to campaign in Michigan, but my name will stay on the ballot. So will Chris Dodd and some others. But so the fact is, Michigan will not mean what it used to mean, but she could win this unopposed.
Email from Katie in Ann Arbor. I'm angry about the Democratic candidates pulling out of the Michigan primary. They're saying to all their supporters, we don't care about your vote. Well, I guess I have to look at the Republican candidates more closely. I hope they don't expect any more campaign donations. I want my money back. Shame on them.
Well, that's what's happening in Florida, too. There are a lot of Republicans who are saying, look, same thing is happening in Florida. They moved up the primary there. The DNC told the candidates not to show up, and the Republican Party in Florida is making a concerted effort trying to get people to switch over to the GOP side out of their anger towards what the DNC is doing.
And speaking of Democrats, flipping through the New York Times this morning, you could not help but notice the full-page ad to draft Al Gore for president. This has been going on at a sort of lower level, mostly on the internet already. Is it possible Al Gore could still get in the race?
Well, you know, this is a very strange year, and anything is possible. But, you know, I take him at his word. He has no intention to run. I think, given the fact that the polls show that most Democratic voters are happy with the Democratic field, you do have these draft Gore outfits out there. This was a very impressive full-page ad, but Gore has given no indication of any intention to run.
Report in Newsweek magazine that should he win the Nobel Peace Prize for his work on the environment, he might change his mind.
Well, if he wins that, and if he also loses weight, it'll be the Nobelly Prize. So, you know, both things, you know.
Let's get Heather on the line. Heather calling us from Indianapolis.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a chance to talk to Sam Brownback. He gave me a call at my home and heard some of my story and wanted to be able to talk to an individual. And I was just so impressed by the fact that he wasn't just going on cold policy. He actually wanted to talk to individuals.
Mm-hmm. And he actually called you up on the phone?
Yeah, he called me. I had written a memoir on my story of keeping my child conceived through rape, and he has policy very much on pro-life, so he wanted to be able to talk to an individual who had made that tough choice.
And impressive that a United States senator and presidential candidate would take the trouble to do that.
That's exactly how I felt. And he listened. He was very authentic, and I was very impressed by his honesty and his tough questions, really, asking me, making sure that this was for real, that, you know, I really am excited about my little baby and things like that. So
well,
it was quite a man.
Heather, thanks very much for the call, and good luck to you and your child.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Sam Brownback, one of the, at this point, one of the Republican candidates who was on that platform yesterday, but not given all that much of a chance.
No, and that's why it's kind of interesting that you do have the opportunity for these lesser-known, lesser-financed candidates to be able to make these kind of one-on-one impressions on voters, because for the most part, as the caller said earlier, you know, Mitt Romney could fly into Michigan, give a speech, and fly out again without looking anybody directly in the eye. But you have these lesser candidates on both sides of the aisle, both parties, who are trying to make this, you know, this one-on-one connections.
And 30 seconds for you on this one last question. An interesting race in Massachusetts for the Congress. You have Democrat Nikki Tsongas, the widow of Senator Paul Tsongas, Republican Jim Oganowski, who lost a brother on 9/11.
Right. His brother was one of the pilots. Democrats have not lost this seat since 1972. By the way, that guy was a fellow by the name of John Kerry. But this was Paul Tsongas' seat at one time. Marty Meehan held into recently. Democrats are favored, but the race could be closer than the Democrats would like.
Ken Rudin, thanks very much.
Thanks, Neil.
You can read Ken Rudin's column at npr.org. It's called The Political Junkie. That's what we call this segment every Wednesday at npr.org. And, oh, by the way, on the radio, too, it's on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.
Yeah, I'll make you glad you got me in with everything I do. And I'll defend until the end the old red, white, and blue. I want to grow up to be a politician and take over this beautiful land. And take over this beautiful land.